Continuing. The guiding influence over the Oswalds of Gregory and of three other Russians, all connected with each other and with the petroleum engineering industry, can only be described as analogous to that of intelligence case officers for their subjects. If the Oswalds needed a car to go shopping or to be moved, the Russian families were there to lend a hand. The penniless Marina Oswald is said to have had 100 dresses given to her in this period, a claim wholly overlooked by the commission in its penny-by-penny accounting of the Oswald's possessions and budget. One of the chief Russian guardians, George Buey, was a 60-year-old personal accountant for Lewis McNaughton of the famous oil exploration consulting service de Golyer & McNaughton, a man with numerous CIA contacts. And in a footnote to this, Scott adds, for example, McNaughton was a director of Republic National Gas and the Republic National Bank in Dallas with Carl Hoblitzella, H-O-B-L-I-T-Z-E-L-L-E, who set up the CIA conduit Hoblitzella Foundation. The president of the Hoblitzella Foundation was Peter O'Donnell, Jr., a Goldwater Republican who sat on the National Advisory Council of the Young Americans for Freedom with Robert Morris. By the way, Morris was a former aide to Senator Joseph McCarthy of Wisconsin and also later served as an attorney for Major General Edwin Walker, about whom we will say more later. Note also here that the Republic National Bank was a Hunt property. That's H.L. Hunt and his sons Lamar, Nelson, and Herbert Hunt. Continuing here. Of the Hoblitzella Foundation, a CIA domestic funding conduit, Scott continues, one trustee was Sarah T. Hughes, the judge who, on November 22, 1963, administered the controversial oath of office to her friend and patron, Lyndon Johnson. And in the main text, so note who administered LBJ's oath of office here, and Scott continues in the main text, Buey was said actually to have been, quote, rather mad at Marina for taking an apartment at Oak Cliff because it was rather too far for him to drive and help her when she needed help with the baby. Lee Oswald, who worked in this period as a welder, greaser, or handyman, was also driven to parties and otherwise cared for by a member of the Dallas Petroleum Club and World Affairs Council, Count Sergei Demorenshield, who knew Jackie's family and who admitted working with French intelligence during World War II. Demorenshield, a key witness in corroborating Marina's story that Oswald shot at Walker, also had numerous political and CIA contacts. He was accustomed to do business on a personal basis with such prominent backers of Lyndon Johnson as George Brown of Brown & Root, the firm whose lawyer Charles Francis helped save Johnson's Senate election in 1948, and John Meekum, M-E-C-O-M. Take note that Demorenshield was instrumental in corroborating Marina's story that Oswald shot at Walker. We're going to take a look at just how funky that allegation was later in the program. Mrs. Katya Ford, who after the assassination took Marina into her house and became her business agent, is of the Oswald's four Russian patrons the only one alleged to be linked to Jack Ruby. At first, the Warren Commission was asking witnesses about Stanley Skotniki, S-K-O-T-N-I-C-K-I, and Katya Skotniki, as two persons in a list, quote, supposed to be associates or friends of people that Mr. Ruby knew and associated with closely, unquote. The commission's interest in the Skotnikis vanished rather than quickened when it learned that Katya Skotniki was in fact Marina's hostess, Mrs. Ford, and that Stanley Skotniki was Mrs. Ford's first husband, even after Mrs. Demorenshield volunteered the unsolicited information that Skotniki, quote, was too anxious to make too much money, unquote. Though Katya denied knowing Ruby, she and her husband Declan Ford, an employee of de Golyer & McNaughton until October of 1962, suggested that their friend and neighbor, John M. Grizzaffi, G-R-I-Z-Z-A-F-F-I, a friend of Stanley Skotniki who was always talking about people, quote, in politics, unquote, did know Ruby. Whereupon the commission's interest in Grizzaffi, a man whose name was found among Ruby's effects, also vanished. It thus failed to learn whether John Grizzaffi, the friend of Marina's guardian and of Jack Ruby, was the little Johnny Grizzaffi who shot at Herb Noble, N-O-B-L-E, on a murder contract for mobster Benny the Cowboy Binion back in 1946. What the report calls, quote, the so-called Russian community in Dallas, unquote, and Fort Worth, was an unusually intense and political one, intense even in its divisions. As the Warren Commission hearings make clear, all but a, quote, small bunch, unquote, of the Russians in the Dallas area had been brought there since 1949 through the good offices of the Tolstoy Foundation, which had screened immigrants carefully to exclude those of left-wing political views. Those Dallas Russians who left Russia during World War II, like Mrs. Ford, were, of course, less aristocratic than the, quote, old guard, unquote, of two decades earlier. The church of the, quote, old guard, unquote, the Orthodox Church outside Russia, received CIA subsidies, and the CIA is said to have used it to recruit spies among the white Russian communities in the cities of mainland China. The Tolstoy Foundation, which maintains a European headquarters in Munich, received, quote, as much as $400,000 a year subsidy, unquote, from the American government, i.e. the CIA, for aiding refugees. In 1948, the Tolstoy Foundation helped arrange the defection of Anna Kasinkina, K-A-S-E-N-K-I-N-A, a teacher who leapt from the window of the Russian consulate in New York. Christopher Emmett, E-M-M-E-T, of the China, Cuban, and Vietnam lobbies played a prominent role in that defection on behalf of a group calling itself Common Cause Incorporated, which also lobbied for Chiang Kai-shek. The other American to do so was Isaac Don Levine, editor of the China lobby review Plain Talk, and later a member of the American Committee for the Liberation of the Peoples of Russia. Levine was the ghostwriter for Anna Kasinkina's autobiography Leap to Freedom, his radical rewriting of an article by Emmanuel Larson in Plain Talk. Larson later disowned the piece, saying he could hardly recognize it, was also the basis for Robert Morris's attack on the State Department communist conspiracy in the Amerasia hearings. In January of 1964, through the good offices of the Declan Fords, Levine met Marina Oswald about writing a book similar to Kasinkina's. Bear in mind the Declan Fords also associated with de Gaulle and McNaughton. Continuing here, in an executive session of the Warren Commission, Mr. McCloy, that's John J. McCloy, former U.S. High Commissioner of Germany, who released many key Nazi war criminals into the services of Galen/CIA, beginning again. In an executive session of the Warren Commission, Mr. McCloy told his colleagues that the Levine book would try to tie the Oswald story, quote, into the Russian business with the thought and background of a Russian connection/conspiracy concept, unquote. For Isaac Don Levine, the Russian conspiracy concept would have been old hat. The real patron of the Dallas Russian community was the Dallas oil millionaire Paul Raigorodsky, R-A-I-G-O-R-O-D-S-K-Y, a director of the Tolstoy Foundation who had also performed other confidential missions for the U.S. government in Europe. George Bouet, again of de Gaulle and McNaughton, testified before the commission that while Raigorodsky was the godfather of the group, he himself, quote, did the organization work, unquote. Others testified that he, quote, even kept files on new arrivals, unquote. From the fact that all members of the Russian community were, quote, well acquainted with each other, unquote, Commission Counsel Jenner elicited testimony that it was, quote, perfectly normal, unquote, for the community to have lavished such care on the Oswalds. Again, supposed Marxist, not bloody likely. Continuing here. Nevertheless, from April to November of 1963, the Russian community severed all contact with the Oswalds, even when Marina was separated and more helpless than before, and their babysitting role was now temporarily assumed by the Russian-speaking American Ruth Payne, a Quaker. Ruth Payne had her own contacts with the Russian community, but had accidentally, unquote, met the Oswalds through one Russian she did not know, Count de Morenshield. Before April, the avowed Marxist Oswald was cared for by the, quote, old guard Russians. These were mostly aristocratic and unified in their nostalgia for the Ancien Régime, in contrast to the more recent and plebeian post-war émigré. Differences between these two emigrations produced two separate Russian parishes in Dallas during the 1950s, each claiming to be more anti-communist but the other, but divided on the issue of what to do about the, quote, liberation, unquote, of Russia. To judge from their testimony, the old guard, even if czarist in their nostalgia, echoed the policies of the American CIA establishment of which they were indeed part. The new arrivals included Ukrainians and other non-Russian Soviet minorities, and some of them, although less aristocratic, were ideologically more right-wing and revanchist. At least two of the new arrivals were far to the right of de Morenshield, whom one of them described in one breath as a, quote, leftist, unquote, and as, quote, an Eisenhower Republican, unquote. Now bear in mind, de Morenshield was a czarist, a German spy, a CIA operative. Again, this gives you an idea of just how reactionary, how fascist this milieu was. It's why I'm going into this series of events almost 30 years old, because George Bush, quite obviously, is part of this milieu. Again, they viewed de Morenshield, who was a pretty ripe individual, as a leftist. One of them described him in the same breath as a leftist and an Eisenhower Republican. That's pretty interesting. Continuing here, unlike all the other Russians investigated by the commission, these two men, Ilya Mamontov and Igor Voshinin, V-O-S-H-I-N-I-N, are said to have made a point of never meeting the Oswalds before the assassination. Yet it was their circle, rather than the old guard, which adopted Marina thereafter. The two Russians who did not meet Oswald are even more interesting than the rest who did. Igor Voshinin was a member of a worldwide Russian organization called the NTS, in English usually called either the National Alliance of Solidarists or the National Toilers Alliance, a semi-covert organization working closely with revanchist elements in West Germany, with the APACL, that's the Asian People's Anti-Communist League, a key element of what later became the World Anti-Communist League, and Kuomintang in Taiwan, and at one time, until the pro-Ukrainian anti-Bolshevik bloc of nations drove them out, with the Latin American CIADC and their proposed World Anti-Communist Conference for Freedom and Liberation. By the way, the WACCFL was the seed group for the World Anti-Communist League, which formally coalesced in 1967. Continuing, although there is little recent research on the NTS, they are known to have been founded in 1930 by a group of émigrés, nearly all engineers, in Belgrade. By the way, if you want to read about the STS and its connections to Third Reich and U.S. intelligence, the book Blowback for Christopher Simpson has a good description. Continuing, many of the Russians who came to Texas after World War II had lived in Serbia, including Voshinin himself, an engineer. During the war, many of the NTS collaborated with the Nazis, and particularly the Nazi Liebrandt in Rosenberg's Ostministerium, who accepted the Solidarists because of, quote, their ideological proximity to fascism, unquote. As such, they ran a training camp for the Nazis at Wustrau, W-U-S-T-R-A-U, and later supplied the right wing of the Russian forces grouped briefly by Himmler under the turncoat Russian general Vlasov, V-L-A-S-S-O-V. The Vlasov Liberation Army became a key element of the Fremde Heere Ost organization of Reinhard Gehlen during World War II. That's my interjection. Continuing again. After the war, the NTS, unlike the other Vlasovites, now called the SBONR, finally refused an American invitation to participate in the activities of the American Committee for the Liberation of the Peoples of Russia, as under the Nazis, the Great Russian and Neo-Slavophil Solidarists refused to have anything to do with any policy which encouraged the hopes of Ukrainians and other minorities for ultimate independence. Yet the NTS continued, despite its illiberal ideology, to have a good press in the United States. In particular, its elitist strategy, that one should appeal not to dissident minorities like the Ukrainians, but rather to the cadres of the Russian army and bureaucracy, was echoed not only in Taiwan, where the same strategy has been advocated for China, but also among highly placed American liberation experts. One such expert who criticized the presence of separatists in the U.S.-sponsored Radio Liberation in Munich was Isaac Don Levine. Of particular interest to the story of Marina Oswald are the repeated stories that the NTS have succeeded in planting agents inside the Soviet Union, particularly in the Army, a fact which may or may not have something to do with the known penetration of Soviet Army intelligence, the GRU, by the CIA. The NTS, along with its Ukrainian enemies in the anti-Bolshevik bloc of nations, also collaborated closely with the efforts of the APACL in Taipei, where the NTS maintains permanent representation, to establish the proposed World Anti-Communist Conference for Freedom and Liberation until the NTS was excluded by a coalition between Catholic Ukrainians and anti-communists from Latin America. During the Hungarian uprising of 1956, for example, the APACL's message of support was transmitted to Hungary via the services of the NTS Radio Free Russia. This makes it likely that the NTS was also in contact in Texas with the allies of the APACL and through them with the John Birch Society and its supporters of General Walker. Bear this in mind, because the alliance between this Galen ABN, although the NTS and ABN were at loggerheads, petroleum intelligence milieu, and elements of the Native American right, such as the Hunt family and the John Birch Society, and H.L. Hunt protege General Edwin Walker, that is one of the major points of this particular inquiry, to see American reactionaries hooking up in a milieu involving the national security establishment of this country and residua of the Third Reich intelligence establishment. That is the historical lesson at hand here, because we have to understand this milieu, of which George Bush is obviously a part, in order to get some idea of just how what is upon us today and how this particular milieu may react in the event of a financial collapse. Continuing with what Scott says here, neither Voshinin nor his friend Ilya Mamontov was asked whether he belonged to the NTS. Mamontov spontaneously denied being a member of the John Birch Society. even before De Morenshield had suggested that he was, while singling out him, rather than Bushinin, as the one, quote, excessive rightist, unquote, of the Russian community. He was, however, a geologist with the Sun Oil Company, whose owners, the Pugh family, have in the last few years given well over $1 million to right-wing organizations such as the Christian Freedom Foundation. The excessive rightist Mamontov, who never met Oswald, was, however, the one Russian who personally knew the alleged liberal Ruth Payne, apart from his mother-in-law, who was her tutor. And it was Mamontov who was the first Russian to renew the community's contact with Marina some 5 hours after the assassination. He had been called by telephone to serve as interpreter at the first questioning of Marina in the presence of their mutual friend, Ruth Payne. It was not, however, Ruth Payne who had first contacted him to interpret, but, quote, Mr. Jack Crichton, C-H-R-I-C-H-T-O-N, unquote, a petroleum engineer, quote, connected with the Army Reserve Intelligence Service, unquote. The commission did not pursue the question of why Mr. Crichton or Army Intelligence should have been involved in the Oswald affair. If they had, they would have learned that until 1962, Mr. Crichton was also a vice president of the Empire Trust Company, a firm whose leading shareholders, the interrelated families of Loeb, Lehman, and Bronfman, are said by Stephen Birmingham to have maintained, quote, something very like a private CIA around the world, unquote, to protect their other investments such as in Cuba, Guatemala, and General Dynamics. We shall soon see that Mr. Birmingham's allusion to the Loeb, Lehman, Bronfman private CIA, that's B-R-O-N-F-M-A-N, is corroborated by the mysterious intervention of Jack Crichton in the Oswald case, and that the proper choice of Marina's interpreter was crucial to the development of the case against her husband. We shall soon see that Mr. Birmingham's allusion to the Loeb, Lehman, Bronfman private CIA is corroborated by the mysterious intervention of Jack Crichton in the Oswald case, and that the proper choice of Marina's interpreter was crucial to the development of the case against her husband. Mr. Crichton's example also shows that such a, quote, private CIA, unquote, of which there are many in the world of high finance, does not compete against existing intelligence and law enforcement agencies, but infiltrates and works with them. Thus, Crichton was simultaneously an Army Reserve intelligence officer and an employee of Empire Trust, one of whose directors was Bowie's and Ford's employer, Lewis McNaughton. Crichton himself had been a vice president of DeGolyer and McNaughton from 1946 to 1950. Crichton, moreover, had not only intelligence but political connections. In 1964, still an Army Reserve intelligence officer, he ran successfully against John Connally as Republican candidate for governor of Texas. That concludes this particular section of The Dallas Conspiracy by Peter Dale Scott. We're running low on time. What we're going to take a look at very quickly now is the intersection between this particular milieu and, we should have time to do this. If not, I will come back to this next week. In fact, what I may do is just run through this quickly now and stretch out with it next week. The reason I'm going into this is to observe the connections between this petroleum intelligence milieu, of which George Bush was clearly a part, and the Galen organization and related elements, because, again, these are the elements that came to the fore on 11-22-63, and what we're going to look at now is the alliance between the Galen petroleum intelligence milieu with which Bush was involved and the American far right, such as the John Birch Society, the Hunt family. And we're going to take a look at the nature of this alliance right now, going back to Peter Dale Scott's The Government Documents and the JFK Assassination. We read of the Hunt operations, from their public stance and behavior, one would hardly expect H.L. Hunt or his sons Nelson and Lamar to be allied with any official CIA operation. For years, they have typified the kind of Texas independent oil operators who have complained about the policies of Washington, the major oil companies, and the CIA. More specifically, Nelson Bunker Hunt was one of the John Birch Society sponsors of the black-bordered anti-Kennedy ad in the Dallas Morning News on November 22nd, an ad which, at a sponsor's insistence, attacked the CIA in an obvious reference to the coup against Ngo Dinh Diem for, quote, arranging coups and having staunch anti-communist allies of the U.S., bloodily exterminated, unquote. In this respect, it may be relevant that Madam New had traveled to the United States with the nephew of a right-wing Texas oil man, Dudley Doherty, and that on coming to Dallas, she appeared at the October 23rd U.S. Day rally attended by Oswald and addressed by H.L. Hunt's protege, General Walker. Bear in mind that Edwin Walker, at whom Lee Harvey Oswald supposedly fired, a protege of H.L. Hunt. But just as the CIA itself was bitterly divided over the question of Diem and Vietnam, so some CIA veterans and other elements within the U.S. intelligence community had close links to the Hunt-Walker-Minuteman coterie described by Treasury agent Ellsworth. One of these persons was Mamontov's friend Jack Alston Crichton of Army Intelligence Reserve, who served as a trustee of the H.L. Hunt Foundation. Again, that's the DeGolyer-McNaughton person who recruits Gregory and Mamontov, both from the petroleum industry. Continuing, Crichton was also a member of the American Friends of the Katanga Freedom Fighters, a group organized by China lobbyist Marvin Liebman to oppose U.S. CIA policies in the Congo. Nelson Bunker Hunt, meanwhile, had become the Texas representative of a German-based intelligence network, the ICDCC, or International Committee for the Defense of Christian Culture, which paradoxically united many of the CIA's most prominent opponents within the United States, most notably China lobbyist General Charles Willoughby, General MacArthur's former G2 in Japan and Korea, with representatives from CIA-sponsored organizations abroad, such as the Ukrainians cultivated by the Galen Organization. One chairman of the ICDCC, Hermann Punder, P-U-N-D-E-R, was a former Abwehr agent and close ally of Galen sponsors Konrad Adenauer and Hermann Abs of the Deutsche Bank, while a later chairman, Theodor Oberlander, O-B-E-R-L-A-E-N-D-E-R, was close to the right-wing German emigre group to whose newspaper General Walker spoke by long-distance telephone on November 22, 1963, transmitting the story accepted by the Warren Report that Oswald had shot at Walker in April of 1963. Interrupting briefly, Theodor Oberlander, a former SS officer, a key official with the anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations, Charles Willoughby, MacArthur's intelligence chief for many years, was born Karl Adolf von Zschäpe und Wiedenbach, a German-born fascist, a deep sympathizer of Francisco Franco, for whom he went to work after his formal retirement for the military. Willoughby also brought Franco to the United States to lecture at West Point. Continuing about the ICDCC, the ICDCC also appears to have been particularly concerned about the future of Vietnam. Thus, Oberlander represented the ICDCC at the 1966 conference of the Asian People's Anti-Communist League, a pro-Diem group, along with several of Diem's original backers in the United States, notably Father Raymond de Jager, G-A-E-G-H-E-R, of the Free Pacific Association, and such other luminaries as Tom Charles Houston, then the Secretary General of Marvin Liebman's World Youth Crusade for Freedom, and later, after a 2-year stint in Army Intelligence, the author of the White House Houston Plan. The ICDCC and Willoughby's allied Foreign Intelligence Digest united many of the American opponents of Kennedy whose names we have encountered already. Among these were Walker's friend Billy James Hargis of the Christian Crusade, Diem's patron Father Raymond de Jager, and Revelo Oliver's intelligence source Frank Capel. These men, like Willoughby himself, were close to Army intelligence rather than the CIA. But the ICDCC also included Jose Ignacio Rasco, R-A-S-C-O, the Cuban emigre secretary general of the MDC, which, as we have seen, was part of the CIA-DIA Artime Nicaragua invasion scheme, and to that end, had established a training camp at Lake Pontchartrain, that, of course, near New Orleans. We are flat out of time. What I'm going to do is to review maybe the last section of tonight's presentation, this particular section from government documents in the JFK assassination, after a lengthy review of what we've looked at, and I will pick up the course of the discussion next week, and we're going to see how this particular petroleum intelligence Galen-related milieu, of which, as we've seen, George Bush was obviously a part, whatever role he may have played in any one of the activities this milieu was involved in, we're going to see this milieu, as we began to see in this particular section here of government documents in the JFK assassination, we're going to see the American far-right, people like the Hunt family, the John Birch Society, hooking up with the boys from the Third Reich, and that indeed is a terrifying alliance. I'm going into this again to help us understand the nature of the political forces that came to power in November 22, 1963. Bush is a part of it. He had many of these same Galen ABN-related elements on his 88 campaign. because these are the elements that will be deciding, in all probability, whether or not Bush gets reelected. The national security establishment of which he was part will still be in place, and unfortunately the dominant elements in this are the elements that I'm looking at, that we're looking at this evening. These are the elements which will be deciding what to do with a financially bankrupt America when that time comes. I do not like the prospects. Perhaps they'll simply say to all the needy, okay, folks, we're going to give you $25,000 in cash and free room and board and a job, but I wouldn't bet on it. Not one bit.
That concludes the prepared portion of this broadcast. This is Dave Emery thanking all the listeners for their contributions and encouraging them to tune in again to the next broadcast. Until then, take care.